This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report podcast. I am Jason Floyd. He is Daniel Galvan, and this week's episode of the podcast is presented by Medterra CBD. We're going to tell you about the great offer they have for the MMA Report podcast listener coming up here later on in the podcast. Got a ton to get to here this week on the show. We're going to talk about what we saw at UFC 252. Also, we'll talk about the MMA that's coming up this week. Got Bellator come up on Friday night. LFA's got a title fight on Friday night. Also, got the UFC fight card on Saturday night. We'll talk about a little fun conversation about the UFC 4 video game. But, Daniel, we got to kick off the show by talking about the major news on Monday, and that is the fact that Jon Jones has vacated the UFC light heavyweight title. And so Mondays are typically one of my more busier days of the week. I mean, typically it's like one thing after another. My morning starts about 7:30 with things I have to do. And, it goes till about 10 o'clock at night. And so Monday nights is when I record the podcast with, Pete Rodgers Jr., the Fight HQ podcast. And we connect on Skype. We're getting, we kind of do our, kind of like what we do, do a little pre-show meeting, talk about things about what we want to talk about. And, we kind of already had like the framework we want to talk about. I was like, hey, by the way, has anything happened in MMA, that I just haven't noticed? And he's like, oh yeah, Jon Jones just vacated his light heavyweight title. I was like, I guess we should talk about that.
Yeah. Jon Jones is a straight up jerk to Daniel Cormier is all I got to say. Daniel Cormier goes out here. He retires, has a great fight. He goes out on his shield. And 24 hours later, the top discussion on MMA podcasts and websites around the world is still Jon Jones, and he wasn't even in the damn cage, man. Jon Jones is a straight-up jerk to Daniel Cormier. I gotta think DC's gotta be like, damn, bro, you couldn't have waited a minute for this to take place. And, Jon Jones vacating that heavyweight championship is incredibly big news because it's a really simple story. The greatest 205-pound champion just gave up the title. And given that he's on the back nine, there's a great chance he will never compete for that championship again. So Jon Jones vacating the title, he's one of the GOATs in this sport. His biggest issues throughout it have been himself. And that's why he has question marks when it comes to truly being the greatest of all time. But we just saw the most dominant champion in UFC history give up his title.
I guess in a way I was surprised, but also in another way I wasn't surprised, because I just felt the writing was on the wall with this eventually going to happen. Obviously, over the past couple of weeks, when in the Jones camp, it's been about the financial side of things. But it was interesting to me during the post-fight press conference on Saturday where Dana White's kind of asked about Jon Jones, and it seemed like kind of the tone in Dana White's mindset had changed. And, the two of the tweets that Jon Jones sent out, he sent out a collection of tweets. But, the first one was like, where he said, just got off the phone with UFC today. I confirmed that I am vacating the light heavyweight championship. It's officially up for grabs. It's been an amazing journey. Sincerely thank you for all my competition, the UFC, and most importantly, you, the fans. And then there was a follow-up tweet about an hour and a half later, which I think really told you everything about what's going on here, where he said, just had a positive conversation with the UFC. Sounds like there will be negotiations for my next fight at heavyweight. All good news. The weight gaining process begins. And even though Dana White, after UFC 252, was adamant that Francis Ngannou is the next challenger for Stipe Miocic, when the greatest light heavyweight champion of all time says he's moving up to the heavyweight division, man, Daniel, it makes me say we're probably closer to Miocic Jones than we are Miocic Ngannou too.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the biggest fight in the heavyweight division isn't for a heavyweight title. It's the number one contenders fight. Jones versus Ngannou is the biggest fight. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen until there's some gold on the line. But in that heavyweight division, if you're projecting long term, what's the big pay per view buy rate? It's going to be Jones versus Ngannou for the heavyweight championship. So Jones is definitely, I believe, going to jump ahead of Ngannou unless Jones has a real delay in his moving up to heavyweight. So potentially Ngannou could get the next fight just because Jones might just take a long time putting on weight and they might wait until fans return for him to fight. So that might be the way in which Francis jumps ahead of Jones. Jones and Ngannou has to be the silver lining of Dana White's dreams. But John Jones' next fight is going to be for a championship. It's, think about this, man. Since February 2011, every single time John Jones has fought, he's fought for a UFC championship. That's an absurd run. I mean, that to me is the one question mark for asking about the motivation of why John Jones would vacate his title. And my question is, legacy in this sport, because he's basically been a part of the light heavyweight title picture for almost 10 years. He's 33 years old. If you're John Jones, why not just keep on going when it comes to extending his legacy? Because, you know, being a 15-year light heavyweight champion, that is something that will probably never be topped. Although 11 years won't ever be topped. Now, maybe John Jones is going when the going is nice. He's going to be able to lead light heavyweight division without a real blemish on his record, without a loss on his record. And the challengers were starting to creep up on him. Reyes nearly beat him. Santos nearly beat him. I mean, those guys may have beat him if depending on whose scorecard you had. So he's able to drop the light heavyweight title without ever losing as champion. His only loss, obviously, is to Matt Hamill, which was a win. But, you know, it's one of those deals where when you look at it from a sports legacy standpoint, and it shows you it doesn't matter as much as the money, obviously. It's like he's gone on a historic run and he was in a position to just continue to hold on to that title. Because when you look past the top four light heavyweight challengers, if he wasn't able to get past them, it's pretty easy road for John Jones. So the legacy standpoint, he's given up on that. But obviously his legacy will continue to grow as from this point forward, every single fight John Jones will be in will be a championship contest. And the next one will be for the heavyweight title. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he looks. I wonder if this announcement takes place if Cormier wins, would be another question I would have. But, I mean, I think it seems pretty clear that the game plan is for Jones to move up. And I don't think it's a coincidence that this news happened around the same time that the Jan Błachowicz and Dominic Reyes fight was announced.
Yeah, you know, Brett Okamoto, I mentioned that yesterday, saying that the fight is nearly agreed to, but the stakes are being worked out, of course, and this was before the John Jones news came out. Also, news in the light heavyweight division that Anthony Rumble Johnson has re-entered the drug testing program with USADA, and Brett Okamoto reporting that, according to Johnson's manager, Ali Abdelaziz, that Rumble is coming back as a light heavyweight. So that brings interest to it. You know, you got, you know, Yuri sitting out there as well. I mean, you would have to imagine Reyes Błachowicz will be for the light heavyweight title. And, you know, Jones, I mean, I guess I wonder, is part of this a thought process of maybe is he just, you know, just doesn't want to cut down to 205 pounds anymore? You know, I think there's obviously a ton of interesting matchups. I mean, I guess timing's going to play into how all this plays out of, I guess, when does Stipe Miocic want to fight next? And I think that's then it probably starts down the trickling effect. Of course, you know, we saw Stipe defend his heavyweight title this past Saturday night at UFC 242, or 252, excuse me. And I think my overall takeaway from the fight is, A, I don't know if you thought this, but I thought Stipe looked leaner than we have seen Stipe in a while. You know, I scored it 4-1 for Stipe Miocic. I mean, you know, I mean, there were some close rounds, obviously, in there. I did, you know, I don't know if you felt this way, Daniel, or not. I just felt that Daniel Cormier looked like a 41-year-old fighter. And, you know, heading into this fight, I was a pretty firm believer that I did not think that last Saturday was going to be the final fight of Daniel Cormier's career. After seeing what I saw on Saturday night, I've changed my tune, Daniel. I think Cormier's done.
Yeah, he looked like a 41-year-old fighter, but a damn good 41-year-old fighter. Like he aged, I think, in that fight. He just looked a bit slower. But this was a guy who still did have a lot of success throughout this championship fight. The overhand was there quite often. The wrestling wasn't, though. And the stand-up wasn't either. I mean, Stipe, I think, looking at this fight, the way I look at what happened here was just Stipe Miocic dictated the terms of how this fight played out, man. A big part of it was the physical component, man. The speed, the ability to work inside and outside. And towards the end, win the clinch battle. Which is not something I would have anticipated, although if you told me it happened later in the fight, I would have seen that. But DC definitely looked worse in this fight than he had probably since the initial John Jones contest would probably be where I would say. There haven't been that many times where Daniel Cormier has looked bad in the octagon. I mean, he leaves quite a legacy. But this performance, losing this way, is the first time where I really thought he could retire. And I don't think he will, though, just because of like three main points. Four main points, actually. Number one, never trust MMA retirement. That's just the golden rule. That's number one. Yes. And I could probably end it there. Number two, I believe DC should fight in front of fans for his last fight. I've been harping on this one since day one. Number three, Cormier, in his comments, isn't even closing down the door. He still says, he says he's done, but unless there's a title fight, he'll take a title fight, which that tells me he's not closing down the door. And number four, this is a big one, and this ties into the fight. The man tore his cornea in the second round and fought three more rounds against the greatest heavyweight of all time. I mean, Jesus, he tore his cornea. I get poked in the eye. I get some dust in my eye, and I'm out of commission for 2 weeks. This guy's cornea is torn. He probably sees 14 versions of Stipe, and he continues to fight. I mean, potentially the cornea injury could scare you into retirement because you're like, I want to read books. But the other side is like, you're like, I had a legacy-defining fight, and I couldn't see for more than half of it.
You know, obviously the eye poke, you know, plays into it. I thought that there was damage on the eye before the eye poke happened. And sometimes, and when I was doing the Fight HQ podcast on Monday night, and Pete Rogers Jr. talked about this, and why I love doing that show is to where I can get a fighter's perspective on things. And he says, you know, look, there are times where you may think that you got poked in the eye, but it's actually, you know, a closed fist, the knuckles going right into your eye. That's where you sit there. But, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me, and I even tweeted about this during the fight, you know, the narrative all last week was, and Cormier was also talking about this narrative of how he was going to utilize his wrestling. Daniel Cormier only had two takedown attempts in this fight. He had a successful takedown attempt in the first round. His next attempt did not happen until the fourth round. If you would have told me that Stipe Miocic would have four more takedown attempts than Daniel Cormier, I would have taken a bet on that.
It's honestly, like, to me, the most what the heck head-scratching statistic of the fight. Because, I don't know if you know this, Daniel Cormier went to the Olympics for wrestling. like, damn, dude, that is what brought you to the dance. And you're going up against a fighter in Stipe who's a damn good striker. On paper, heading into this fight, the striking contest, in all likelihood, was going to go Stipe's way. I mean, Cormier throughout his career has progressed, and he's a darn good boxer himself. Again, those power shots are lethal. But that's where Stipe has a real advantage. Where DC has a real advantage is putting Stipe against that cage, picking him up, slamming him down, winning rounds with takedowns. And the head-scratching moment is, this is for all the marbles. Cormier goes in, he wins. He's known as the greatest heavyweight of all time, even though most of his UFC fights were at light heavyweight. Granted, the Strikeforce fights were heavyweight. All the marbles, retirement fight, and you leave. I mean, why do you think he wasn't trying to wrestle Stipe? Because I don't know.
The only thing that would make any sense to me would be maybe a cardio aspect of how much that would take out of your cardio. That to me is the only thing that makes sense. But you brought up this topic about Daniel Cormier, and it's a really interesting topic. And this is a topic that made me think a lot, Daniel, and it was the top five training partner fights. And so, you know, there's been times throughout MMA, you're like, oh, man, I wish these guys would fight each other. And I've kind of always taken that mentality of like, man, wouldn't it be nice to just walk into a gym and see these two guys sparring? And obviously the first one that came to my mind was Cain Velasquez and Daniel Cormier. What, you know, when you looked at, especially when Cain was in his prime, what were those sparring sessions like? I really struggled with this one, Daniel. Another one that came to my mind, and I don't know if it would come to your mind. How about Demetrius Johnson and Bibiano Fernandez?
That one didn't come to my mind. That's a great one. Because honestly, it's much harder to come up with this list than I thought it was. Actually, when I first pitched it, I was like, oh, there's got to be so many. But the thing is, like, training partners fight each other now. I mean, especially if you're from American Top Team, that's just like a rite of passage. And half the time, it's a grudge fight anyway. Like, freaking, you know, Jorge and Colby, obviously, they don't train together anymore. But damn, but you have guys who actually do train together. Usman and Burns. And we saw JDS and Jair. And across the board, we see so many guys changing camps. That it seems like there really aren't that many teammate versus teammate fights that we want to see that we can't see. So there's a couple. Bibiano DJ. I thought we were going to have similar ones. I don't have that one on my list. But that's a great one that you mentioned. I think sticking within the lighter weight guys, man. You talk about DJ. He's probably, you know, the greatest lighter weight fighter of all time. One fight I would have loved to have seen when both these guys were in their prime. If you're making a top 10 of lighter weight fighters of all time, guys who are the most impressive when you watch them fight, you were like, damn, they're amazing. They're never going to lose a title. Two names would be Jose Aldo. That's a no-brainer. And the other one is Henan Burrell. Obviously, he's had a depressing run, a truly depressing run. But when he was champion, I thought this guy was the bee's knees. And he fought down a weight class because of both training Nova Uniao, and that was the instruction of his trainer. Burrell versus Aldo for the featherweight championship in a world where Burrell fights at featherweight, that fight, oh, God, to me, that would have been a hell of an interesting fight when both these guys had all of the hype behind them before, you know, for Burrell, you know, he kind of turned into a pumpkin like it was a Cinderella story.
I wrote down just various names because it made me think of top training gyms, fighters training in that weight classes, you know, weights, you know, that they fight in a similar weight class. I'll give you some of my more notable ones. You know, back in the day, we all talked about, you know, what if John Fitch and Josh Koscheck fought? I don't know how much that fight would really interest me stylistically. I just don't know how great of a fight that would be. I got to think this one has got to be on your list. How about George St. Pierre versus Rory McDonald?
Yeah, that's on my list. That's a great one, man. That is a great one. Both guys with Farasa Hoppy at the TriStar Gym. During that UFC run as champion, George taking on Rory would have been one of the most compelling title challenges in GSP's run. I mean, you mentioned Fitch and Koscheck, and That was a fight. Like that fight and in Strikeforce, Jake Shields and Nick Diaz, because they both trained together too. Those two fights in those divisions were the ones that really, I believe, made the teammate versus teammate thing a conversation. But the Fitch-Koscheck thing was more so not because it was going to be a great fight, just because they were number two and three in a division where they'd already lost to the champion. It just made sense for them to fight. But Rory would have been such an intriguing challenger that Rory versus GSP is definitely on my list too. I mean, that's a great historical one. I think I think one other historical one, and you already mentioned the Cormier-Cain fight. That to me is literally number one on anybody's list. But another historical one is another guy who's kind of probably pressured to move down a weight class. And that would be a Joseph Benavidez versus Uriah Faber, Team Alpha Male brawl. I think that fight, you know, when Faber was in his prime, I think both those guys were some of the best lighterweight fighters of all time again. And I think Faber and Benavidez is a fight that would have happened if Joseph Benavidez wasn't training out of Team Alpha Male.
Faber, Dillashaw is another one that there have been a lot of heat behind that one if we would ever seen those two guys go at it.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I mean, that whole Team Alpha Male group provides a lot of those because they're all similar weight classes for the most part. And so you could pick and choose, and obviously things have changed as Dwayne Ludwig is in the background with the Sith. But I'll give you, I have one last one, and it's still cooking, right? It's in the oven right now, and I'm not ready to pull it out. And it kind of parlays into UFC 252. But down the line, this won't happen. But on one corner, you could put Matt Serra, and the other corner, you could put Ray Longo, and let's watch Aljo take on Merab.
Yeah, those two guys are like best buddies. So I know. I've got one other fight, and I was pretty sure you would not think of this one. And this is more of like, I would just have loved to have been in Alliance in San Diego and see these two guys go at it because when they were, obviously Cruz is still there, but when this other person was there, who's a fighter who's been through he's gone to a couple different gyms, I think it would just be interesting to see how a sparring session went between them. That would be Dominic Cruz and Darion Caldwell.
Oh, that's a good one, man. That's not something I would have thought of at all. I mean, that's cross-promotional. The wrestling versus the striking, the athleticism of both individuals. That sounds great. I mean, I was thinking back to what it would be like to be what the hell is the saying when you're like a mosquito in the room? What the hell? Is something on the wall? What the hell is that saying, Jason? When it's like a fly on the wall. There you go. I would love to be a damn fly on the wall. Hopefully there's no fly spray involved. Watching some of these guys train. Like, I want to see Aaron Pico take on a higher level fighter. I want to see these high level wrestlers spar and showcase their potential. And Caldwell versus Cruz, that would be fun to watch. That's a great, great pull by you. And I think there's probably some other ones. Like, I think, you know, Pat Miletich and his gym, the Miletich Martial Arts. I mean, they had a lot of great fighters. I mean, Lawler, Miletich, and Hughes. They had a lot of great fighters in that welterweight / middleweight kind of division. And maybe a fight between those guys would have been good too back in the day.
I just came up with another one, and I know these two guys have trained together in the past. Once again, would be a situation, would love to be a fly on the wall when these two guys were going at it inside a Fight Ready there in Arizona. Patricio Pitbull and Henry Cejudo.
Dude, that's a good one. That's a freaking good one. I mean, I would be hyped for that. That they do it for a featherweight championship, and Henry Cejudo will definitely sign a contract for that fight. Damn, what's the ultimate brothers fight? The ultimate fight between brothers. You have Nogueiras, you have Pitbull brothers. I mean, I guess the obvious one has to be the Diaz brothers, right? There's nothing topping a Diaz versus Diaz fight.
Pitbull brothers would be number two.
That would be dope. That'd be so awesome. I forgot to ask you this question. We're talking about light heavyweights, and I'm sorry. I just got to ask you because it's been bugging me, and I just want your answer to this question. Actually, I'm gonna save it. It's a tease. I'm gonna save it for when we preview a particular card. I apologize. I have a captivating question I want to pitch to you when we talk about Bellator.
All right.
But yeah, I think all those fights would have been amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously there was definitely a time in the sport where teammates definitely would not fight teammates, but you bring up a great point. It does seem like we're in a little bit of a different world where you do see some teammates that are willing to compete against each other. In terms of other things that happened at UFC 252, we did have, in terms of the betting odds, two notable upsets. First off, Marlon Chito Vera getting the TKO win against Sean O'Malley in the first round. Daniel Pineda defeating Herbert Burns in the second round. via a TKO. You know, first off, you know, as I was watching the fights live, and as O'Malley loses a fight, like, I wasn't even thinking about, like, okay, how did he get injured? How was it something Chito Vera did? Which clearly it is something Chito Vera, you know, it laid into it. You know, it was good news. I saw Ariel Wani had a tweet that there's no, you know, everything is looking good. No broken aspect of it, but they got to wait for the swelling to go down and make sure it's not like a tendon tear or something like that. But my first thought was, man, Sean O'Malley at 25 years old has been through some notable injuries. Like, you hope this is not a case where a guy who clearly has a ton of abilities, that injuries are just going to set his career back so much.
Yeah, it's a shame to be, you know, he went through hip surgery. That postponed him along with the positive test for the Osterine. And you look at a young guy, you're just like, that would suck so bad if the injuries is the thing that derails Sugar Sean O'Malley's run. Because, dude, like, it's amazing what's transpired with O'Malley. When you look at the reach he has, how many people know who he is, how many people follow him on social media, how many people care about his fights, and how few UFC fights he's actually had, it's kind of amazing. I guess you could start with the Contender Series, but after that, five fights in his UFC run, and he's already one of the biggest stars in the promotion. It's would be really sad if his career's derailed by injuries, because the UFC knows that fighters like Sean O'Malley are very rare, and it's really hard to pinpoint why, but when you have guys who matter with a massive amount of fans at a quick rate, you want to cherish them like they're good. I mean, literally, when I look at the amount of people who care about Sean O'Malley this fast, the last name I can think of is Connor. I know it's a stretch, and he won't be as big a draw as Connor, because Connor McGregor, much like John Jones at 205 pounds, has set a standard that will take a very long time to top. But the meteoric rise in how quickly people know who Sean is similar to that. And that would suck. Because when you watch the O'Malley-Vera fight, you know, kudos to Chito Vera. You got to be so thrilled for a longtime veteran in the UFC having the win of his career, playing the role of spoiler. And don't look now. I mean, he's won 7 of his last 8. But you watch that fight, and you don't come away thinking Marlon Vera is 100% a better fighter than Sean O'Malley. I mean, he got the win, but Sean was clearly injured. And I know in this sport, most people are. And the injury appears not to be as significant as like the way he was fighting and the way he reacted after the fight was over. I thought this dude was going to be on the show for a year. And that's not the case, apparently. So, you know, I don't want to make excuses for O'Malley, but he was fighting so poorly. He was absolutely in just a world of kind of like he was. It was like I don't know much about NASCARs. You know more about NASCARs than I do, hosting a podcast on Osimo. But I tell you what, you know, it doesn't have to be like NASCAR. It has to be like my own car, Jason. I haven't changed my oil for like 7,000 miles, and now I feel like parts of my car aren't working. And it felt like parts of Sean's car wasn't working inside the octagon. And that's a dangerous place to be against a dangerous fighter in Chito who took advantage of it. But yeah, the moral is, God, I really hope Sean is able to get a healthy and stay healthy, because I want to see his potential. But kudos to Chito. That's a huge win.
I will tell you, doing the MMA Live Before Lock show on Saturday on Osimo, and seeing what people in the YouTube chat were saying about Sean O'Malley before the fight, and you know, and obviously there's been a lot of hype built around Sean O'Malley, and I'm a big believer that I believe the hype is real. I mean, yes, it's a loss, but you see, when you put on the film and you just watch this kid's ability, you just see it, and you know, you just hope that injuries are not going to take away from him. But I mean, I feel like he's become this personality in the sport where it's a very much, it's a love or a hate thing. There is no in between. Like I always use this analogy coming from a sports radio background where Jim Rome is a type of radio host where you love her or hate him. There's no in between. And I kind of feel like just based on things I saw, you know, on YouTube in the chat and various things on Twitter during the fights, like I feel like that's the place that Sean O'Malley's in. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do, man. And I think you see that often with the meteoric rise guys. There really aren't too many fighters that make that meteoric rise that do it without ruffling some feathers. I feel like feathers must be ruffled to make that jump. And Sean's done that. I feel like a big part of it just has to be his look. It's a very outlandish look. And I feel like people are... I think the outlandish look with the hype really rubs some people the wrong way. They're like, oh, it's a hyped guy. But you watch the, you know, this guy looks like Tekashi 6ix9ine with his colorful hair and his, you know, crazy quotes. He's full of himself. I think maybe that's what some people think. Also, it's why we love this sport as a fan. It's the fanatic part of it is you love some fighters and you root against others. And it's a part of the theater of the sport. It's the good guys and the bad guys. And each fan has their own personal favorites and least favorites. And as long as you get people to care, they're going to purchase the pay-per-view. And Sean does that, but he's very polarized. And you mentioned the tape, though, and the tape doesn't lie. I mean, just rewatch the last performance against Eddie Whiteland. He sent his soul down to the Thunderdome. And that knockout was like, oh, damn, maybe we weren't hyping Sean O'Malley enough, was my thought after that fight. I was like, damn, let's put him in the cage against Cody Garbrandt. So Sean's boxing, his stand-up in particular, those aspects of his game are like scary good. As he returns, I'm interested to see. I think for sure. I the two major things holding him back, by and large, injuries. It's going to hurt him in performances and fights, as well as the time he could have spent preparing and improving as a fighter. He's spending rehabilitating his injuries. That's a negative. And secondly, I think the grappling and wrestling, specifically the wrestling, that's a big factor when it comes to whether or not he would be a dominant top five fighter down the line. But again, very tough loss. It's worth remembering his age. He still is only 25 years old. I think this is a guy who, if he gets a good bill of health, I really think his prime will probably be his age 28, age 29 years.
There's still a lot of room for Sean O'Malley to grow. And look, he still has a chance. But, you know, look, I hope that Chito Vera finds himself into a big fight. This guy has been on a nice little roll here. Even, you know, I mean, look, yeah, he had that controversial decision loss against Song Yadong. But this guy deserves a top 10-ish type fight. We'll see if that does happen. But do want to let you know that our presenting sponsor this week is Midterra CBD. They are one of the leading CBD brands in the industry with a full line of functional CBD product. It applies easily and smooth and leaves you with a refreshing relief that it will take with no matter where you go. All their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, and they contain zero THC. And when you get one of their boxes, they've got a QR code right on the box. That's all you got to do is scan the QR code for the detailed lab results. I will tell you, anytime I take CBD, that is something that I am looking for, where I can scan something and I know exactly where it comes from. And one of the things that I love to use CBD for, Daniel, is back pain. I have suffered for back pain for a long time. And you know, you go to that grocery store, you go to your local, you know, drugstore. When it comes to back pain, I have tried everything on the shelves. But I will tell you, I found out about CBD pain cream, and man, this has changed my life. You know, it'll be once, two, three times a year where my back will go out on me, and CBD cream is the way that I go. And I got to tell you, Medterra sent me their pain cream, and it is absolutely amazing. Anytime my back, you know, I feel like it's starting to get a little rough, put it on, man, and it feels great. Makes me feel good to where, you know, those other products that you get from the store, sometimes you're stuck on the couch for a couple days.
Look, man, sometimes you are just blessed in life, and I was blessed in life to receive Medterra CBD, and I will continue to be a customer because the pain cream is amazing, and it's something that I really needed. But I'm a dumb dude. I'm like, I if I have a problem, I ignore it. And I just, like my car and the oil change. One of the problems I've had, Jason, is like my thigh just has a lingering pain. It hurts so bad. And I just ignore it. I think a big reason why has to be sitting in a chair all day for work all the time. In addition to some athletic stuff I like to do. I'm not much of an athlete, but my thigh hurts all the time and it keeps me up at night. I use the pain cream, and the thing is, like, it works so quickly. It smells kind of good and it feels cool. And Medterra CBD has really, really changed how I enjoy my day, because I can't tell you how relieving it is, Jason, to just sit down in a chair, do this podcast, and not be thinking about the pain on my thigh. Medterra CBD has helped me out with that. It's helped me sleep better. And I cannot stress how great Medterra CBD is. If you have some type of lingering pain, that pain cream is a game changer.
And I will tell you, I recommend anyone I know that has back pain. I always tell them, I better tell my buddy Ronnie. It was like, he had some back pain. He's like, man, what CBD do you use? And I tell him, you got to check out Medterra CBD. They are where you want to go to. And for the MMA Report podcast listener, they are going to give you 20% off at checkout when you enter the code MMA Report at MedterraCBD.com. MedterraCBD.com. Enter the promo code MMA Report at checkout to receive 20% off. As I said, highly recommend trying out this pain cream. If you got back pain, joint pain, any type of muscle pain, you got to check that out. And of course, we appreciate their support here of the MMA Report podcast. And when you hit that promo code, it lets them know that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. But Daniel, you know, another thing to talk about when it comes to UFC 252, we talked about eye pokes, and you know, there was we saw about fence grabs coming into it. And you know, you brought up this thing in our text about, you know, hey, what can be done to stop fence grabs? And you know, the reality is, it's, you rarely see a point deduction get taken for a fence grab. I remember being at a local fight, I would say probably about two and a half years ago. And it was like the first or second fight of the night, guy grabs a cage once, grabs a cage a second time, and the referee, you know, pauses a fight right there and he takes a point. And I was at the fight, so my buddy Mike, I just look up and go, holy, well, you know what the next word I said. I was like, he actually took a point away for a fence grab.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's something that you would think we would see more often because the offense happens so often. But that's a highlight reel moment. Yeah, I thought of this crazy idea, and I thought of it when I was watching the. There wasn't a lot of fence grabbing in the fight, but Merab versus John Dodson. When I was watching this fight, and by the way, two things about that fight: Merab, unbelievable. John Dodson, a great defensive fighter. Lack of offense is why he hasn't had the success he's had. But, I mean, so great defensively. I feel like he's a magician because when he fights, it's almost like the cage becomes the canvas becomes a trampoline. Because every time he gets taken down, boom, he jumps back up. I've never seen that type of ability to jump back up. But, anyways, I digress. Merab looks great, by the way. I thought of this because when John Dodson was getting clenched against the cage by Merab, John was doing something so interesting where he had his fist closed and he was just using it against the cage. And the referee was like, don't, oh, you're fine. You're fine. Good job, John. Good job, John. Like, it was like so much of the emphasis was about Dodson using his fist to kind of hold himself against the cage rather than interlocking his fingers. And it just felt so distracting. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I'm like, this is all John is thinking about right now, is making sure he doesn't lock against the fence. He's using it for leverage. So I just thought, I had this crazy thought watching this. I was like, bro, why do we even have a fence in the sport? Like, why? Why is there a cage? You know? Like, what if instead of a cage, it was still an octagon, but it was just all glass? Jason, what if it was just all glass around the cage? You could see everything, no obstruction, and no more cage grabbing. Tell me why this is a stupid idea. What if it was a clear thing?
Rogan brought up that point on his podcast sometime within the last 6 months or so about, you know, getting rid of it, of the cage and how it could affect the fight. I mean, look, I think it's just like eye pokes. Fence grabs are the same thing. You want to start reducing it. You start taking points more seriously. I think that's what will get fighters all of a sudden curl their fingers in. That's what you'll get. I mean, look, if I am a striker, I am taking on a wrestler, why would I not try to use a fence grab to help myself, especially if I know the referee's not going to take a point?
Because, yeah, especially if it's a pivotal moment where you're like, I'm going to get put down. If you're not getting a point taken away, you're doing yourself a disservice not to give yourself an advantage in that fight. So, realistically, we won't do away with the cage, right? It's a trademark. And now I know I may need to go see my therapist if I'm starting to think of the same things Joe Rogan is. I mean, I'm probably going to come out here and talk about Muay Thai cups next. But I think the punitive aspect of it being more, because the thing is, John Dodson displayed, it is 100% possible to have a real sense of what you are doing with your hands. It is such an intentional thing to grab the fence. It's not a groin strike. You don't accidentally grab the fence. You might have a reflex, but it's something where upon the first offense, that should be a point deduction. It's like if Jason, you come out here, and all of a sudden you go for a takedown and I bust out like a kendo stick I had in my trunks and I hit you with it, but I only do it once and I get a warning. Like, I chose to bring a kendo stick in my trunks and I chose to hit you with it. I should get a point deducted. If you choose to grab the cage, you should get a point deducted. It is not an eye poke. It is not a groin strike. It is not unintentional.
By the way, you mentioned about shorts. I got to bring this one up. What is up with Daniel Cormier putting his shorts over his belly button? I don't understand this one.
Dude, you know, DC, man, he's a 5'11 heavyweight, man. Leave him alone. All right? He's probably got, I don't know. It's an old school heavyweight deal. But it's a look we never see in MMA, ever. Ever.
I told Pete the other day, I said, I go, if you see me pull my shorts above my belly button, you have permission to smack me.
Yeah, that's a old man move right there, man. That's ARP checks coming in mail pretty soon.
That's a straight up dad bod move right there. I'll say this in terms of, and this will be my final thing on UFC 252, and if you got anything else, just let me know. If there's one fight you go back and watch, to me, is Kai Kamaka versus Tony Kelly. That was a fun fight. That was one of the fights where Tony Kelly was kind of grabbing the cage. Third round, risk reward, goes to that guillotine, puts himself in a bad position. That was a great fight. For two guys who got that fight on 4 days' notice to go in there, make their UFC debut, and then get a $50,000 bonus for fighting the night, those guys are living a good life this week.
Yeah, they won fight of the night in a night where we had a historic heavyweight fight, so kudos to them. For me, I'll just run down the four quick thoughts just to mention it. Verna Jandaroba completely told Felice Herrig, brought her down, got the tap. Dominant win for the strawweight. Vince Michel, Jim Miller, very, very close fight. Jim Miller continues to make history with the amount of wins and volume. Obviously didn't get the win here, but this was close. It was a grappling fight, and Vince won in the third round. Two other points. Jair Rosenstruck continues to be a scary dude in the heavyweight division. Junior Dos Santos was winning the fight in the first round, but Jair, you could tell, was just staying patient and cautious, and boom, unloads in the second round. And Daniel Pineda, I did not see that coming. Holy, that was not a flash knockout win. That was a dominant win where he went into Herbert's game, the grappling game. He dropped him in the second round, got on top. Great ground and pound. I think Daniel Pineda had a hell of an opportunity, and he performed against a guy in Herbert who I was, you know, had the world of expectations. So all those performances were notable to me.
Actually spoke to Daniel Pineda. That interview will be up on the Mayor Reports YouTube channel. Also spoke to Vince Pichelle, got the win against Jim Miller. And kind of my big takeaway from the conversation I had with Pichelle was simply that he felt that Jim Miller and his team had underestimated his grappling abilities. And you know, did note that the submission that Jim Miller got him on the third round, he said, he goes, you know what, if that would happen in the first round, he goes, it may not have gone my way in that one. So be on the lookout for those over at the MMAReport.com. But, you know, Daniel, you know, Sunday I went out to have lunch with a buddy of mine. And honestly, the first time that I had been to a restaurant that I have, that I am not a part of the team of. And it was kind of weird. The fact that we were like literally one of like four people in the building. But one of the TVs was on the UFC 4 video game where they were like having, you know, fighters and celebrities, you know, play each other. And I was looking up and I was like, man, that street fighting backyard thing actually looks kind of cool.
Yeah, UFC 4, man. I think I haven't played a UFC game since, crap, I feel like the last UFC game I played was Sudden Impact. But I also could have played the first UFC one. I think I did play the first UFC one, but a Sudden Impact on Xbox, that game was awesome. Like, I loved it. And I think with all the promotion of UFC 4, I looked at the rosters, and I know there's a lot of top 15 guys not on it. I think tomorrow or Thursday, I'm going to go to Target. I'm going to go buy the game and play it a bit. I haven't been playing too many video games lately. And I think I wanna buy me some UFC 4 and see how the gameplay goes.
Usually, so I've played all of the UFC EA games, and because I have EA access on Xbox, so usually I just wait till it goes in the vault and then I can download the game for free. But yeah, I'm interested in it. Usually, like when I've played the UFC games, like I'll play it for like a week, 2 weeks, and then kind of like, I don't know, it just doesn't interest me at that point. I'm very much of a Madden NBA 2K player.
I did not take you as a gamer at all, as a guy who plays video games. I just figured you're a busy man. But yeah, I play Madden. It's the only time I can see my Houston Texans win a Super Bowl. So I gotta play the video game. But yeah, I did not take you for a gamer, Jason.
Oh yeah, dude. Growing up, so every Friday, my mom would take me to Blockbuster, and I would be able to rent one or two video games for the weekend. I mean, you name the gaming console, good chance I owned it. I mean, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, PlayStation, Xbox. Yeah, yeah. When I was growing up, the way my mom would punish me is she wouldn't just ground me. No, she would literally take my remote controls away from me.
Wow, that is, yeah, dude. That makes me smile because, man, I did not play video games as much as you did. Like, you sound like you were into it. Like when I went to Blockbuster, I was more interested in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle videotapes. Actually, like, I loved that and the Power Ranger movies. So I didn't play video games as much. I still played it. But the happiness video games brought me, especially I would play it with my friends. My friends were always better than me at video games. And yeah, that brings up nostalgia. And, you know, we had Blockbuster and Hollywood Video, and renting a video game was such a cool experience. You were able to do that and try so many different games. But yeah, I think now my job currently, I work from midnight to 8 a.m., so I feel like I'm going to have some downtime, you know, throughout the day. So I think I'm going to try and get back into video games. And I think my first big purchase is going to be UFC 4. So I don't know when I'm going to buy it, but once I get some good game time in, I'll see if it's worth talking about on the podcast. But I can't believe you play video games. That astonished me. I wanted to ask you, like, what was the last video game you played? And I wanted you to tell me, like, it was Snake on the phone or it NFL was, Blitz.
Yeah, it was funny when you asked me that. I was like, yeah, funny enough, the night before I had popped in Madden, I had bought a Nintendo Switch early on this pandemic, just because, you know, I like the old school Nintendo games, and I've got the Nintendo Online thing on Switch, so I get to play, like, all the old school Nintendo, Super Nintendo games. Like, I was excited the other day, they added Donkey Kong Country to the list for Super Nintendo, so I've been playing that. You know, sometimes I just sit on the couch, I play Tetris 99, just something just kind of, you know, but I don't have a ton of times, like, you know, where I can sit there and, like when I play Madden, like, I'll start a franchise and, like, I want to start with the franchise that, like, I can build the roster around, you know, like, he's like, okay, who's got a rookie quarterback? Let me go to that team. Let me try to build that team and play, like, you know, 5-6 seasons, you know, with that team before moving on else. And, NBA 2K, I am, like, on Madden, like, I don't really play anybody. I just play offense. I just, you know, I'm just an offensive type of guy. But, like, NBA 2K, I like to do the create a player mode and just play seasons with a player that I create.
Yeah, I like doing that with Madden, where you're the quarterback. And that's fun. I did it on this past Madden. I got to the Bengals. That was a fun time. But, yeah, I did the create a player, and then I do the franchise. I mean, like, two games that stuck out to me. Like the most influential game was this won't be a shocker, but Raw vs. SmackDown, the WWE game, 2007 in particular. Holy, I played the crap out of that game. Especially, I got on the PSP and the PS2, and I would play the hell out of that. And then, dude, Pokemon OG. Like, I feel like my generation, dude, Pokemon, that was the jam, because you would play it, like, you would have your Game Boy, and hell, you'd be addicted. You'd play it when you go take a bathroom break in school, you know. And now, like, kids don't understand how cool that feels, because like you're just always on your phone, and the phone is like a Game Boy on steroids. But when I was a kid, shoot, You just had to pay attention to your teacher or the drool on your desk, and you go to the restroom, you can break out that Game Boy and play a little bit. So that type of experience is probably something that people, you know, I don't think you get that out of playing Angry Birds on your phone on the restroom, because you were probably already doing that in class.
I literally love to walk into, like, a third grade classroom, hand them a Game Boy just to see what their reaction would be.
Yeah, I know. And they'd be like, the graphics suck. Where can I take a selfie? You
bro, know, like, that's what they'd say. Like, I was playing Donkey Kong Country the other day, and I was like, man, I remember this game came out, man. I thought the graphics were insane. And now you look at it, you go, oh, man.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you think back to when you were playing these games when they first came out. And obviously now I'm at a point where I look at the games that I played, and I remember thinking, damn, these graphics were good. Like, GoldenEye, I didn't play GoldenEye on Nintendo 64 till, you know, after it'd been out for a while. But I never for a second thought the graphics were bad. I thought they were great. And then you go back and you see what we thought were great. Hell, you watch old sports broadcasts that are SD. And I can't even watch SD anymore on my TV. It's amazing. It's amazing how quickly stuff that we consume visually changes. I can't even, you know, like just imagine what the hell we're going to be interacting with in 20 years, you know, or some 4D nonsense.
Look, if you would have told me 5 years ago that I would be a cord cutter, wouldn't have cable, wouldn't have satellite, I would have said, there is no way that's going to happen. I couldn't imagine going back to satellite or cable now. It's just the way we consume content is so different. But I will tell you, Madden comes out, I think, on what's it, Friday? Oh, yeah, I think I got to pre-order that thing. Yeah, I'll be this weekend. I'll definitely be hitting up the Madden. I know, like, 2K just came out, is coming out with a PGA game, I think, this week. So, I like the Roy McIlroy EA game they had a couple years ago. So I might do that. But yeah, it's I go in spurts on video games. Like, I'll play them like for like a week and a half, and then I won't play for like 2 months.
Yeah, I'm like that 100%. 100% I'm like that. I did not realize Madden was coming out. Damn.
Yeah, if it's not this week, it's next week.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. They announced the cover not that long ago. Crap, I need to start saving up some money, buy me some video games. Yeah, This we can launch our offshoot video game podcast in a few weeks.
Well, the Twitch about, channel. You
know, yeah, we have a Twitch channel. That's a good idea. Yeah, you even have me excited about playing a damn golf game, Jason. What the hell? Now I want to buy the golf game.
But you know, the thing I do miss was back in the day, you could go to Blockbuster, rent some game to figure out if whether you liked it or not.
That's a good call. That's a good call. You had a much bigger diversity. You could play some stranger games and chances are the most popular games weren't even there anyway because they were already rented out. So you were forced to play something you probably didn't want to.
I will tell you a game that me and my wife played. We bought it a couple of months ago. It was a game that I played as a kid and I forgot how much of a game, how frustrating it can be and just really piss you off. Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, I remember that one. I never got good at it to even get pissed off at it. My friend had it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. You can, they have it for Xbox now and PS4 and every gaming platform. Like I remember playing that as a kid, and then like I saw it at Target for like it was like two or three of the games of Crash Bandicoot for like $20. And I was like, all right, cool. Let me grab this and then like we're about 20 minutes into playing, and I was like, oh man, I forget how much this game can literally just get you so frustrated. Like my wife will get so frustrated, she'll just hand me the controller. I'm done,
dude. Like that's hilarious because I feel like as a kid, that's the first time in our lives we're ever truly angry. I think video games teach us to be pissed. Like as a kid, I think I was a pretty happy dude, but I was never more angrier than when I started sucking at a video game. Like that was real unadulterated rage. You're throwing your, like that is real anger. And I feel like that's the first time most children experience that type of disappointment and just full on rage.
I remember one of my buddies growing up, He was such a sore loser that if we were like playing Madden or some sports game, if he was about to lose, he just turned the thing off. Go, we didn't play a game.
You see that's when you start to like distance yourself from those friends. those friends are the worst, and everyone had them. And if you didn't, you were the one.
Exactly. But you know, Daniel, there is a ton of MMA to consume this weekend, so I guess I can't play too much video games. Friday, you got Bellator 244. Also on Friday on UFC Fight Pass, LFA 88 welterweight title online. Vinicius de Jesus, who we've seen in Bellator, most recently the CES welterweight champion. He'll be headlining that card, taking on Jaleel Willis. And then, of course, on Saturday, we've got UFC on ESPN number 15, Pedro Munhoz taking on Frankie Edgar. Interested to see what Frankie Edgar looks like at 135 pounds. Bellator definitely is probably the fight card that I am most intrigued with this weekend. And I guess it's primarily because of the main event between Ryan Bader and Vadim Nemkov. But it is a fight card that I definitely, have interest in throughout the fight card. I think the best way I would do to describe it, I would describe it as a solid fight card. I know they're doing the virtual media day tomorrow. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to take part, in that. But obviously, you know, besides Bader and Nemkov, the fights that interest me is me more looking at the preliminary card more than anything else. Yaroslav Amosov taking on Mark Leminger. Leminger just coming off that win, so quick turnaround for him. Amosov, man, that kid is super talented, 23-0. Interesting to see Adam Piccolotti versus Sidney Alwal. Do expect Adam Piccolotti to get a win there. And Eric Perez and Josh Hill is another fight that interests me on that Bellator card.
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic has forced Bellator to put on good prelims. I mean, Bellator's always put on notable preliminary cards, but because they're not pressured to put on fights to sell tickets, and, you know, that makes sense why they would do that, it cuts off a lot of the fat. So you look at the entire prelim card, and you get excited about it. I mean, even There isn't a single fight on Bellator that I'm not somewhat intrigued by. There are fighters that are lower on the totem pole with potential. And then you mentioned it. Amosov is just, he's just, it's just crazy to me that he's on the prelims. I mean, this is a 23-0 fighter. He's coming off a win over Ruth.
You know what's more amazing to me about that fight card? And I did not realize this until I was doing my show with Pete Rogers, where I pulled up the betting odds. Roy Nelson is a 6.5-1 underdog.
Yeah, that stuck out to me too. I was going to mention that. That's insane. Like, he's a 6-1 underdog. Valentin Wodowski, who has fought 10 times in his career, who has only one knockout win, who's gone the distance in all but one of his last seven fights, I believe. He should not be a 1,000 favorite, 10-1 favorite, right? Look, I know Roy Nelson's past his prime. I know when you look at Roy Nelson's Wikipedia record, it's a whole lot of red. But I don't know, man. I just think he has knockout power. I mean, Roy Nelson is not my pick. I'm just making the case that minus 1,000 for Modosky, who's just barely getting his sea wings under him, is crazy odds. But I'm not going to make that big of a case for Nelson, because Modosky deserves to be the major favorite. It's just very startling to see those odds associated with Roy Nelson against a guy in Modosky who's just barely getting started in his major professional MMA career.
You mentioned earlier you had a little teaser about the light heavyweights, which was clearly in relation to Ryan Bader. What was that?
Yeah. Is he the best light heavyweight in the world now? Is my question. If he was in the UFC, would he win the light heavyweight championship now?
That's a good one.
I don't know. I mean, I think it comes down to how well Reyes performs against Jan. Because I would take Bader over Błachowicz.
It's a debate of Bader versus Reyes. Ooh.
Honestly, my gut instinct is telling me Bader, which is...
That's my gut instinct, too. That's a good one, man. That's a good one.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, you know, 3 a.m. as I was at work today. I thought about I can't text him now, he's asleep, but... I was like, no, with John Jones giving up the title, I mean, Ryan Bader might be like, can I come back?
Yeah, I mean,
I want to be champion.
I mean, the only thing I would say is Bader is 37 years old. Could the younger, you know, athleticism of Dom Reyes give him issues? But man, that's a great one. I think people are going to underestimate Vadim Nemkov in this fight. I don't think Ryan Bader will. I do expect Ryan Bader will. Man, that's a really good question.
The question might be Vadim Nemkov after the Bellator card. Who knows? Like Vadim's a live dog in this fight. Dude's a killer. Dude's an obscene.
That's a great question if you're Scott Coker, that people are debating that question. That's a really good question. Be interested to hear what our listeners think about that. I mentioned about the LFA card, Jaleel Willis and Vinicius de Jesus going to be fighting for the vacant welterweight title there. We'll mention that Nick Maximoff, who's a part of that fight card, someone I've talked to frequently, trains out of the Nick Diaz Academy. He's going to be a part of that card. I've got an interview that's already up on the MMA Report YouTube channel. So be sure to check out that. Natan Levy versus Ben Lugo is scheduled for this fight card. This fight was supposed to happen back when LFA had their first fight card back, but Natan Levy's, one of his coaches, tested positive for coronavirus, so the fight did not happen. It's now happening here. Evan Elder, an undefeated lightweight that I've talked to in the past, he's a part of this fight card. So, of course, LFA, they always put on very good fights. And, of course, on Saturday, the UFC card. You know, obviously very interested in Pedro Munhoz and Frankie Edgar. What does Frankie Edgar look like at 135 pounds? How does Alonzo Minifield bounce back, taking on OSP? OSP dropping back down to 205 pounds. Agapova, I feel like that's a very much of a showcase fight for her against Shayna Dobson. The fight that, to me, that I'll make sure I'm definitely paying attention to the television set on Saturday night, Daniel. Takashi Soto versus Daniel Rodriguez. I don't know how long it's going to go. I doubt the fight hits the ground. That to me has the recipe for fight of the night.
Yeah, I agree, dude. Dude, Takashi Sato, damn exciting fighter. Like he has had a fun fight after fun fight after fun fight in the UFC, and Danny Rodriguez as well. This ESPN card kind of sucks, gonna be honest. Not looking forward to it. I think Sato Rodriguez, I'm excited for. I'm excited for Manningfield OSP. You mentioned, I mean, Maria Agapova's as big as a dog as Roy Nelson is. I think Shanna Dobson's an even bigger dog against Agapova. Let me double check. She's crap, I can't find it. Plus 800 dog for Dobson, and Agapova is minus 1250. That's astonishing. But Munoz, Edgar's good. And then the one fight that I'm looking forward to, even though he's a heavy favorite, I am interested in Timur Valiyev making his long-awaited UFC debut after the previous fight canceled. So Valiyev's UFC debut is something that I have my eyes on. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll be watching. I mean, I will definitely be there. I'll be, and sitting and watching the fight card. But yeah, I mean, look, you're exactly correct. It is not the most exciting fight card on paper. There is no question about that. But yeah, I'll be watching. I mean, the reason you're getting to the television set, obviously, is the main event of Frankie Edgar and Pedro Munoz. Pedro's a sizable 2.5-to-1. Betting favorite, and there's a reason he's that, and I don't know what to expect at Frankie Edgar at 135 pounds. You know, one of the things I do is, I kind of look around Instagram and I see how Fires are looking. He looks in incredible shape. I don't know if this is a 3 or 5 round fight. I'd heard about 2 weeks ago that potentially this was going to be a 3 round fight. I know previously Pedro Munoz had talked about that Frankie did not want it to be a 5 round fight. So, and I know when the UFC sent the press release out on this event, it did not state whether it was a 3 or 5 round fight. I mean, I'm expecting that it's a 5 round fight, because I would have thought that if it was only a 3 round fight, that news would already be put out there. But I'm looking forward to it. There's a ton of MMA to take in this week. Of course, every Tuesday night we've got the Contender Series, so that's definitely something. Every Tuesday night, usually I'm editing this show as those fights are on, so that's usually kind of what's going on in the background of the television as I'm editing this show.
Yeah, I think hopefully we get something. It is one of those things where the Contender Series is kind of lost on us because it happens when we record it, and then by the time we get back to record our next podcast, it's already been 7 days away. So maybe we should do like something where it's like who impresses the most in the Contender Series when it's a wrap. But
obviously not. This podcast comes out on Wednesday, so I'm not talking about this week's episode, but the previous week's episode, they gave out 5 contracts, which is something that you rarely don't see, but all well deserved. I mean, I think it's also a situation where with so much uncertainty of our world and for the, all MMA organizations, especially when you look at the UFC of, okay, when is there not going to be travel restrictions? When are we be able to get, our overseas fighters into the United States, or do we have to do all those fight cards, in Abu Dhabi, which I thought was interesting. I saw, let's say it was Brett Okamoto reported this, that Khabib Nurmagomedov is not going to be doing his fight camp for his Justin Gaethje fight in the U.S. He's going to go out a month in advance to Abu Dhabi and do all of his training in Abu Dhabi. And so I think what we're seeing here, Daniel, is I get the sense that I think we're going to see the UFC sign more fighters off the Contender Series this year than they normally do, just to have fighters ready to go. Because, look, how many times on these Vegas cards that we see a change happen during fight week where all of a sudden, someone's stepping up on 3, 4, 2 days' notice, even a day's notice to take a fight?
Yeah, I mean, it's quick. I mean, we may see fighters who fought week one of the Contender Series take a fight in October. you know, on a UFC. Hell, we might see a fighter who 1 week, 1 week, 2 week, three, take a fight in September in the UFC. So I do think most of the winners, if they're impressive, will get contracts. It's interesting that all five fighters got it in week two. The UFC is in a need for fighters just because it's a very tough times. And I wonder if the Contender Series will get extended even longer. I wonder if it will go longer than 6 weeks because, you know, there's not much else to watch. So, you know, it's just like if you have the fighters, I wonder if they'll make it a little longer this year.
I would say no, just because I feel like they might start running out of the type of talent they want on that show.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah, but time is going to tell there. But as always, a ton of things going on in the world of MMA. We do appreciate everyone checking out this podcast each and every week. Truly appreciate every time that we see those download numbers that come in. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor this week, and that is Medterra CBD. Visit MedterraCBD.com and enter the promo code MMA Report at checkout to receive 20% off. And as Daniel and I told you a little bit about earlier, this pain cream that both of us got, I'm telling you, got to check it out if you got muscle joint pain. It is something that if you've not tried CBD for that pain, highly recommend giving it a try. It is something that I do all the time, and it helps me out tremendously, especially when I have back pain. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
It was pretty obvious, and they always have been this way in the Big Ten, a little bit high and mighty to the point of we're better than you. We're going to be the ones that provide you. You know, we're going to be the leaders and best. You know, that kind of that quirky, that's kind of how they see themselves. Right or wrong, that's kind of how they see themselves. I can tell you that speaking with athletic administrators and coaches, this should not be a surprise to you that none of them are for this move. If you want to blame anybody in the Big Ten, don't blame your football coaches or your athletic directors. Nobody's in a position to do anything about it. In fact, in some cases, your president of your university is not to blame. Oh, yes, they vote. But let me remind folks that in a state institution anyway, the president of the university answers to the governor. That's what they do. So it's how it works. So they're dictated to how this is going to get done. Now, rarely is the governor involved in anything to do with a football program or an athletic department unless it's something big like major funding for facilities or something as dramatic as COVID-19. There was, obviously these decisions were made by Pennsylvania governor's been really big and certainly putting the pressure. The Penn State had to vote, no football, cancel it. Ohio, and we know that Penn State head coach and administration football-wise, athletic department-wise, wanted to play, but not the governor. The state of Ohio, same situation. You know, Ohio State wanted to play, governor there pushing that decision, driving that decision.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.